Portage Health Foundation is proud to introduce you to do-good volunteer Carol Jones. Jones is a former teacher that now donates her time to help students at Horizons High School in Mohawk. The students refer to her as Grandma during her weekly visits. With patience and compassion, she has helped many students gain a diploma. A common statement from Horizons graduates is, "Without Grandma Jones, I would never have made it." If you know an incredible volunteer like Carol, go to dogoodcc.org and nominate them to be recognized as the next Do Good in the Copper Country Volunteer of the Month.
Welcome back to segment two of Copper Country Today. We're brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. Learn more about them and their mission at phfgive.org. Big headlines about a major land acquisition in Keweenaw County recently. The Nature Conservancy has stepped in to buy a whole bunch of property that is going to be dedicated to public use over the next years because of this move. And I welcome Helen Taylor from the Nature Conservancy to the program this morning. Helen, thank you for your time and welcome to Copper Country Today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Explain for us first what the Nature Conservancy is.
So the Nature Conservancy is a conservation organization. We're actually a global organization. We are the largest conservation organization in the world, so we have a footprint in all 50 states and 70 other countries, and our mission is to protect the lands and waters on which all life depends. So we have a team of people in Michigan that have been working across the landscape on science, working with working lands of farmers and foresters, but also protecting lands like we're doing in the Keweenaw. And it's kind of nice to be back because we have been working in the Keweenaw for a very long time, for a number of decades.
What brought this large amount of land to your attention?
Well, the owners actually put them up for sale, and it triggered a lot of conversation in the local community and lots of letters sent to the state saying, you know, these are really important lands that need to be protected. And it actually triggered also people reaching out to the Nature Conservancy to see if we might be able to help in some fashion. And that draws me back to about 20 years ago when I first took this job. And that was one of the first big land protection projects I was involved with in the state. And that involved over 6,000 acres that rimmed the tip of the Keweenaw, because at that time those went up for sale and there was a lot of concern about development and losing public access to those lands. And so I think some people remembered that and said, you know, can you help in protecting these lands? So it was a pretty visible announcement when those lands went up for sale, and it's an area of interest to us. And so I think a lot of people sat up and noticed and tried to figure out, well, what can we do to help?
Who owned them?
So it's owned by it's a company called the Roatan Group, which we also call TRG. And so that's who we are acquiring the lands from. And they are a firm out of Boston. And that's common across the Upper Peninsula, is timber investment entities owning the lands. And they, you know, are most times enrolled in the Commercial Forestry Act, which gives public access, and they're forested. And it was a time where they decided to divest.
And that addressed my next question. How did they manage to come into all of this? But certainly those of us who watch property in the Upper Peninsula understand that there are these huge hodgepodges of land ownership collections that go back to the lumbering days and even the railroading days, when land was handed out as payment for building railroads in the region, and mineral rights were handed out as payment for building railroads in the region. And all of this has come down through the years, and it's wound up in the hands of investment groups such as this, and they decide to sell it. And it was a fairly big price tag.
Yes. I mean, that history is an interesting one in the Upper Peninsula, because actually 20 years ago, in late 1990s and early 2000, the large industrial forest land owners were all names that we might remember, like Champion and International Paper and Mead. And they were the vertically integrated companies that owned the land, owned the mills, employed everybody, made the paper, et cetera. And over time, those are almost entirely gone and now owned by these investment companies. So there's been a lot of change in ownership.
Well, and we've had Heritage Lumber companies back here many, many years ago that owned a lot of this. And Ford Motor Company owned a ton of land in the Upper Peninsula for foresting and logging purposes. So there's just been a whole hodgepodge of different companies that have been involved up in here. And it's resulted in, and if you look at the map of the land that you're purchasing, it's not just a nice big block of land. How many different parcels are there?
Well, it's owned by a singular company, but it, when you look at the map of what we purchased, I would probably describe it as five blocks. The way it was put up for sale, though, is in four parcels. So there's two to the east that they called the Point, then one that is kind of right next to Copper Harbor that they call Harbor View, one down near Bay Degree, and that was called Little Betsy, and then there is Alpine. So four is how they broke it up for the sale to market it.
Now, are you buying all of the land that they own, or is there some other land that they're holding on to or perhaps selling off to someone else?
Yes. Yeah, so what we have come to agreement, we have agreements in place to protect more than 31,000 acres. And what we have already closed and now own, and that was the day before we announced this, that closing happened, that we closed on 22,700 acres. And that would be three of those parcels that I talked about, the Point, Harbor View, and Little Betsy. We weren't, however, able to reach agreement on the fourth one, and that's the one called Alpine. However, we were just an amazing conservation-minded individual actually has acquired that now. They acquired it the day after that announcement, and they've agreed to sell the bulk of it to us, including all trails, before the end of the year. So we'll be purchasing over 8,900 acres more from that individual and by the end of the calendar year.
And that individual then will be holding on to some of that for themselves?
Yeah, we haven't really worked out exactly the map of it, but it's unclear if they want what they're doing with all of it, but we know that we will be able to get 8,900 acres of that. And I suppose there's a possibility that it's all of it, but it was enough to actually get through a purchasing the three that we did. And so everybody probably wants a lot more answers than I have for the next steps, but we're going as fast as we can. But we do have an agreement to buy it at fair market value, but we haven't. There's not a specific acreage associated with that, and we have to begin to work out those details.
Was there competition for this? Were there other people interested in buying all or part?
You know, there's no way for me to know if we had competitors or not. So I really don't have any information on that.
Okay.
I think we were concerned there could be, and so we wanted to be successful, but I actually don't know.
How much is this costing?
Well, the price that I can tell you, because it's happened already, is the purchase price for those three parcels. So that was 22,700 acres. The price was $27.2 million. And we have yet to determine the price for that fourth parcel. But I know it will be within fair market value range because as a nonprofit, we cannot pay above fair market value. So I just know it will be within a given range.
That is a large chunk of money. Where does that come from?
Well, we have a lot of money to raise. And so we went and got a very big loan. What I'm really proud to say is that this area of the world is recognized by the Nature Conservancy's Global Board of Directors as globally significant. And it's certainly recognized by those of us in the region, in the Great Lakes region. So our leadership actually was very well aware of it. Our senior leadership visited it. And so we were able to secure a loan to do this acquisition. But now, and this is often what happens, if we don't have that money, we then go and work on public revenue streams and private philanthropy. And so that's what I'm spending my time doing is figuring that out now. So we, in a few cases, had individuals who said early on that if you're able to do that, I will definitely help. So that gives us the confidence to go for it. But by no means do we have all that funding secured. But we take those risks. I'm fortunate enough to work for an organization that allows me to do that when it's important and timely. And if I had to raise it all first, then we probably wouldn't have been able to do it. So in the momentum of and excitement of having raised it, I hope people step forward and help out.
I'm still stuck on us being globally significant here. I mean, it's for us, it's our backyard, and we recognize and believe that this is a wonderful place. It's really kind of stunning, though, to know that people at a much higher level look at our little corner of the world and think that highly of what we have here.
Oh, my gosh. I could go on and on about all the reasons, but there are the reasons that you know, but maybe you don't realize how significant it is. But in terms of, from the science standpoint for the Nature Conservancy, it ranks as one of the most climate resilient and significant places for corridors and undragnetted wilderness.
Wait a minute, what is corridors and undragnetted wilderness?
Oh, unfragmented.
Oh, unfragmented, I'm sorry.
It's intact.
I was looking for Jack Webb.
So it's good for the wildlife and things like that. It's also really important because of all those trees that are sequestering carbon in the face of issues like climate change. It is historically and culturally significant. I mean, that history goes back a billion years. And the first human evidence of human metalworking is in the Keweenaw. The largest lava flow on Earth is in the Keweenaw. It's in the middle of the largest freshwater lake in the world, in the middle of the largest freshwater system in the world. So there's so many things that make it special and unique. And you only need to talk to people locally for all the reasons that they live there and love it. All of those things factor in because it's, I think at the end of the day, it's equally significant for both people and nature. And that's what makes it really so such an honor to have been able to help in this way so that the community can actually look forward to a future where they know they'll have public access forever. The local economy is going to be, you know, local tax base is protected, and it won't be fragmented. And those were the three things that we heard repeatedly as we talked to people about what was important to them and why it was so important to protect these lands.
I'm talking with Helen Taylor from the Nature Conservancy. Major land purchases in Keweenaw County that are going to keep a lot of land available for public use for eternity, we would anticipate from this. The local Native American population, the Keweenaw Bay Indian community, the Ojibwe tribe, how have you worked with them in terms of what their goals are for this and what their priorities are?
Yes, we've been in touch with KBIC throughout, and they are actually part of a 17-member planning committee that we have formed that we're sponsoring or supporting, I'd like to say, because it's really what we're trying to provide is support to the community to figure out that long-term land ownership and management and in a holistic, integrated, and collaborative way. And so KBIC has been part of that. So public access for gathering medicinal plants and such were some of the things that they communicated to us as very important. And their CEO is actually on that planning committee. So together with all of those different voices, we'll be making sure that we're providing the support for them to come together to figure out that plan long term.
What does that plan potentially look like? Because I'm sure that there's an interesting balance, a tightrope, I suppose, that you have to walk between developing it so that it can be accessible to the public and, on the other hand, preserving it and not turning it into, you know, downtrodden trails all over the place.
Exactly. And it's not going to be a plan that we write. It's what this committee will pull together themselves. And I don't worry about conservation values being part of that because when we've done public meetings, surveys, and interviews, and in fact, all of that engagement, we've actually hired someone. We found someone who has done this in many rural communities to help them design their prosperity plans for the future. So it's really something that we've brought in experts to help us with and help the community. And we're learning along the way. But the first meeting that they had a lot to do with sharing what are their values and what are the priorities and what are their concerns and What are they most worried about, and what do they most want? And it's amazing how similar they are. And so it's just providing a place where people can come together and plan. So you're right. It involves people from the different jurisdictions. It involves the different user groups, outdoor recreation. It involves people like the sheriff, because there are issues of infrastructure and public safety that need to be considered, along with the tribal interests. So it's a matter of facilitating a conversation, but I think when you all come together, you find how common your interests and values are. There's more that people have in common, and that's why they're there and live there, and how much they care for the land. I'm very optimistic that it's people want the same things in many cases, and it's just sometimes you have to provide the space for people to come together to talk about it.
Are there any specific limitations that the Nature Conservancy puts on overall? I mean, would you be open to ATV trails and people zipping back and forth? Would you be open to four-wheel drive truck trails and people zipping back and forth? Or is there a limit to what you will allow on the property?
Well, so one of the things that was really important is, you know, trails are incredibly important to the local economy and to the outdoor enthusiasts that enjoy those things. So all the trails that you might see on the maps are anticipated to continue the way they are. That was part of one of the objectives is that those are really important lifelines to local businesses in different seasons, et cetera. So there are some limitations down the road if potentially, but based on current use to date, no. We see it continuing in that same way. The whole point is to actually integrate those uses and understand what sustainable use is together. So I think I don't think any of these user groups or people who have these interests want to love the land to death. And so everybody wants to find that balanced use so that all those different hobbies and recreation and what they enjoy, because everybody has different things they like to do. So I don't anticipate that being really an issue, because the whole point was to find that balance and protect these lands so that all these uses compatible with wildlife and all these other services and forests, et cetera, that it provides to find that balanced use. So I anticipate that we'll be able to find that pathway.
What about activities such as hunting and trapping? Will they be allowed?
So the current, right now, it's enrolled in something called Commercial Forestry Act. And as long as we own it, it will stay in that. So what Commercial Forestry Act program of the state of Michigan allows is hunting and fishing by foot. Those rules are kind of already established. And so we're just going to maintain those. So it'll stay enrolled in CF. And then eventually, we don't anticipate being the long-term owner of these lands. And so that's what we have to figure out is we believe that it really is best in the hands of public ownership. So that might be an arrangement of some state, some county, some township. And then when that happens, it might transition out of CF in some cases. It'll depend. And then the rules of those entities would come into play. But for now, there would be no change while we own it and until the ownership actually changes.
One of the things that comes up when land here goes from private ownership to public ownership is what happens to the taxes that might have been paid on that property previously, which would have gone to support Keweenaw County and the various townships and the Grant Township School District. Is there going to be a significant tax loss for those organizations, or with most of this already enrolled in the preservation programs, the logging forestry programs and such, I know a lot of that tax doesn't get collected anymore anyway.
Well, actually, it's enrolled. So under the private ownership of TRG, it was enrolled in the Commercial Forestry Act. And so because we will maintain it in CF, actually, nothing will change while we own it. And then the portion where the state owns, then actually it transitions to payment in lieu of taxes. And so it gets better for the community. So the tax base will not be harmed because it's actually staying in the same level of taxation from the current ownership to us because it'll be in CF. So that would not have any impact or change for the local community.
Okay. Is this land that you might at some point log? Because there is an environmental benefit sometimes to going in and clearing out trees, creating better habitat for animals, that kind of thing. Would you be at some point doing some logging on this land?
Yeah, so we because it is going to stay enrolled in the Commercial Forestry Act, we actually are required to create a forest management plan. And so that is possible. We anticipate owning it maybe 3 to 5 years at most, depending on how long it takes for public revenue streams and the transition to happen. During that time, some of the lands have actually been harvested at the level where we probably will let it rest for a while. I do want to point out that the Nature Conservancy, we do own what we call forest reserves elsewhere in the state, 25,000 acres in the Two Hearted area, about 25,000 acres in the Nishigami Highlands area. These are working forests. So it may be a surprise to someone to hear that the Nature Conservancy cuts trees, but what we're trying to use those places for is laboratories for learning for sustainable forestry practices, how to restore the diversity and age of some forests to make them more resilient, to make them support wildlife even more, but also recognizing that these are working lands that need to support jobs and actually throw off a profit for private owners. And so we're trying to demonstrate that it's possible to have it work for nature and for people. So working forests is actually very familiar and something we do elsewhere in the state a lot. How much we'll do it in the short time we own it, unclear until we actually write up that forest plan and get to know the land and its stage, you know, of where it is in the cutting regime. So it's hard to say if it's much during that time until we actually get deeper into it. And so since we just bought it, that'll be what we'll be focusing on over the next year.
Yeah, I tell my friends downstate sometimes that the forests up here are like really slow motion farms that, you know, you harvest every 40 or 50 years because you have to wait for the next round of trees to grow up to maturity. But that's a lot of what they're here for. They create paper, they create lumber, they create things of that nature. And properly managed, they also provide benefit to wildlife because mature forests don't support wildlife as well as regrowth forests do. And if you're interested in the wildlife in the area, you want to have somebody go through and cut every once in a while, don't you?
Well, you want forests at all those different age succession stages because they provide value in all kinds of ways at each one of those stages. And so what we try to do is make sure that a healthy forest has a landscape has a bit of all of the above. When it's all same age, same species, you are at risk of maybe the next invasive bug, you know, being that bug that, you know, just like we see with emerald ash borer taking all the ash down. You know, a more diverse forest in terms of species and age for all those stages of succession actually provides the optimal value for all the things you just listed.
Helen Taylor, you mentioned that there's a board, a committee that's being put together to help develop plans for this property. Will there be opportunities for public input as they begin to meet and start to make proposals and decisions?
Yeah, so what our hope is that those 17 individuals actually, they come representing, we tried to actually choose very thoughtfully and wisely about making sure it's representative of all the different interests out there. So my hope is, and expectation is, they are going back and gathering all that public input from their various constituencies. The community foundation, the Keweenaw Community Foundation, is also helping in. One can go to their website, see who's on that community planning committee, and so that they could communicate interest to those members. And it also has things like the details of the project, and we'll try to keep that updated as we go. But that's one way for people to see who has that. We also have an email list that when there are new announcements or things, the Community Foundation is helping us get that information out to folks.
Well, it will certainly be interesting to see how this plays out and if you can eventually transfer ownership over to, as you said, perhaps state government, local governments and such. And I appreciate, Helen Taylor, very much your time in explaining things. Helen Taylor from the Nature Conservancy, thank you so much.
A pleasure. And I just want to emphasize what a privilege and honor it has been to be able to work with the community on this and to see this outcome finally realized. So in many ways, it's just the beginning. So I'm excited for what happens next.
And we'll be back with Copper Country Today in a moment.